Where to begin? I think the date was 2012, and the place was Washington State, not Washington, D.C. Washington State. There was this massive forest fire that was burning, and there was this photographer for a national magazine who was assigned to get photos of the fire and the burn and all that type of stuff. And so he went and tried to get up close, but the shots were, it just wasn't working. And so he called head office and said, I need you to rent me a plane or a helicopter or something to get aerial shots, which will be far more dramatic. And so they said, fine, go to the local airport and we are going to get you a plane. He arrives at the airport, and sure enough, there's a guy standing beside a plane. Just a little two-seater Cessna, and he runs over to the plane, and he says, come on, let's go. He grabs all of his equipment, and he throws it in, and he says, let's go, let's go. And the pilot, okay, hops in, gets it going, and swings the plane, and off they go. They fly into the air. He goes, I want you to fly over the north side of the fire and make three or four low-level passes. And the pilot says, why in the world would you want me to do that? He goes, I'm a photographer. I'm here to take pictures of the fire. He's just exasperated with the pilot. He goes, what do you think? Like, do you have a problem with that? And the pilot got very quiet, and then he began to look nervous. And the photographer says, what seems to be the problem? Just fly over the north side. Still, he looks nervous, and he begins to sweat. And then the pilot says, so you're not my instructor? Bit of a dilemma, isn't it? What do you do? Well, today as we look at our scripture, we come to a huge dilemma of epic proportions as well. Life or death. Let me tell you, that plane dilemma, I never want to be involved in that dilemma. Up with someone who needs an instructor. No, I'm going to stick to those who are professionals. But here we have in the scriptures a dilemma where Pilate has to make a decision, a life or death decision. And he is finding himself in a very difficult spot. And often we back ourselves into a corner, and getting out is, there's just no real good solution. No matter what choice is made, there are consequences to be had. And this morning, with Jesus before Pilate, he's faced a terrible dilemma. He found Christ innocent, and yet the Jews, they wanted him crucified. He tried to get Herod to do the dirty work, but that didn't work out. And now only he could give the order. And Pilate has found himself in a huge dilemma of his own making. John 19 begins like this. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in purple, in a purple robe, and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for the charge against him. And when Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for the charge against him." And the Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he has claimed to be the Son of God." At the end of chapter 18, we saw that Pilate had gone out to the Jews who were accusing Jesus, and he said to them, I find no basis for the charge against him. And this has become a bit of a reoccurring theme for Pilate. In chapter 19, we see that he says it again and again and again. I find no basis for the charges. But then in chapter 19, it opens with this phrase. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. I'm sorry, but these two phrases don't connect. I find no basis for the charge. Go flog the man. I don't see he's done anything wrong. Go flog the man. I think he's innocent. Have him flogged. What? What is going on in his head? They're in complete opposition with one another. Who flogs someone who has been declared innocent? You see, Pilate can't settle this in his own mind. He flip-flops between a desire to do the right thing and being pressured from jealous men. Perhaps sending him for punishment would suffice. And so he sends him to be flogged, a punishment that would cause most men to wish they were dead. At least Jesus would be out of his sight during the flogging. He wouldn't have to look at it and watch it. And this flogging was referred to as a pre-death death. It was a horrible and brutal experience. The individual was taken. His hands were bound to a post that is roughly waist high. In the center of the praetorium, the fortress of Antonio, 9 3-foot strands of leather were attached to a handle. Each strand had pieces of lead or brass or bones embedded in them. Were attached to the end of the leather thongs, and when the victim's back was torn bare, removed from any clothing, they would unleash their fury against him. They had perfected their technique, and they knew when to take the individual and turn him over so that they would get the front as well, the legs, trying not to overly do the belly, because, well, they knew if they did too much there, the person would die from disembowelment. And they would shred his skin and they would beat him until he was almost dead. If you were to go to the fortress of Antonio today, and I have seen them with my own eyes, when you look at the floor in the Praetorium of this horrible place, you can see the scratches from the many, many people who were flogged. The scratches left in the stone floor. These men didn't hold back. Their weapon could literally scar a stone floor. And I mean, as much as I'd like to see Jesus as the man of steel, he was a man of flesh. It's a horrible punishment. A punishment that was given to him after these words, "I find no basis for the charge against him." Why don't you just go ahead and flog him instead? Pilate, what is wrong with you? But wait, there's more. Verse 2 says, the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they clothed him in a purple robe, and they went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. This mock coronation with the soldiers taking several reeds and fastening to it a crown with 6-inch palm, date palm thorns, razor sharp. If it wasn't those thorns, it was literally the plant called the crown of thorns, which has 3 or 4 inch thorns in it. And then they have this crushed into his skull, using one of their purple or scarlet robes, which would have been worn by one of the military officers. Essentially, they were dressing him up for what? Well, let me tell you what for. For healing the lame, the blind, and the dumb. For raising Lazarus from the dead. For blessing children and feeding thousands. These insanely cruel men, according to the other Gospels, they actually went as far as kneeling down before him and spitting in his face and upon his torn body and giving him a scepter that is made out of a reed. The one who created the very universe, the one who breathed life into man, who holds the cosmos in balance and has reigned from eternity, inhabiting our speck of dirt called earth, subjected himself to this. And we hate to dwell upon this. It's uncomfortable because it's so gruesome and cruel. But he did this for us, and I pray that we could understand the depths of his suffering, that we would take it in and truly begin to realize the brutality, the pain, the suffering of what Jesus did to bear my sin and your sin. And yet we try to sanitize it. We have these beautiful crosses, some of them polished nicely, and we wear them around our necks and our He bore all of that because we are sinful. But once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no charge or no basis for the charge against him." As Pilate presents Jesus to them and says, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for any charge against him." Pardon me? If you find no basis for the charge, Pilate, instead of bringing him out to the crowd, release him. Isn't that how that usually works? I mean, my understanding of court is, "I'm sorry, I find no basis for the charge. Case dismissed. You can go home. You're free to go." But Pilate doesn't do that. How could it possibly be that bringing him out to the crowd would somehow... How is this going to end up in a good thing? How could this substantiate his conviction that he felt that there was no real reason for Jesus to be subjected to any of this? "Well, I've beat him, we're mocking him, we're dressed him up. We made him look like a king. And in that bloodied form, stand before the crowd and say, I find no basis for any charge against this man." And to bring the Lord out, the Lord of glory, crushed with a crown of thorns, dressed in somebody else's clothes, holding a reed as a scepter, a complete and utter mockery of humanity. And Pilate presents them this spectacle and says, "Here is the man. Behold the man." He's saying, "Do you think that this man is a revolutionary who overtly wants to overturn Rome? Look at him. Behold the man. Does this look like someone who's going to take over? Does this look like a king to you? Does this man look like he's full of authority, going to overthrow Rome?" But folks, this is not some pathetic, low-life criminal who can do nothing for himself, because he actually deserves that punishment. No, this is the King of Kings, the King of the universe. This is God incarnate. This is the one who in a moment or two could just say, "I could call 12 legions of angels, and this whole thing would be finished like that." He could have done that. Yet we are so prone to wander, and our very nature is indifferent to God and disinterested in who he actually is and what he has done. That is what our human flesh nature is saying. That's what the people were saying that day. We only want to have a God so that we have someone else to actually blame for all the stuff that's going wrong in this world. For all the depravity in this world is God's fault. It's not ours. We don't want to take any responsibility. Aren't we really good at blaming others? Who put Jesus on that cross? It was the Romans. It was the Jews. It wasn't me. But it was. My sin, your sin, put him on that cross. And as soon as the chief priests and their officials, they saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" It's amazing how much hate fills their hearts. How filled with hypocrisy and self-righteousness to be so convicted that they are right and so dreadfully wrong. And instead of the spectacle inducing them into a lump in their throats, seeing what has happened to this man, because just a short while ago they had brought him to him. He was perfectly healthy. Yeah, he had his ego bruised a little bit, punched him a few times, but he was intact. And now he is not. Is there no lump of guilt in their throats? No sense of absolute shame? No, because they demand more. Crucify, crucify. But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for the charge against him." If that's true, Pilate, let him go. Have the courage of your convictions. Stand up to the crowd. Do I need to remind you, you're Pilate? You're the one in charge? But this ominous chant, "Crucify, crucify, 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 crucify." It just keeps going and going and going, and it rings in his ears. And he knows that he is a real predicament. And of course, at the same time, he knows that they cannot carry out that kind of execution without him. So he hates this crowd. He hates those people who are leading them. But a sense of disgust for them is somehow or another not great enough to overcome his fear of them. Otherwise, Christ would have been released. But in all of this, the plan and the purpose of God from all of eternity was being fulfilled. Was Pilate exercising his privilege as a Roman governor? Yes. Was Pilate making wrong decisions all the way down? Yes. Was Pilate fulfilling the will of God, as Isaiah 53 said that he would be punished, bruised him? That all of this was according to the foreknowledge of God, that cruel men delivered him up? Yes. And so the Jews insisted, "We have a law. And according to the law, he must die because he claims to be the Son of God." What now? Excuse me? Now you bring up he claims to be the Son of God? But what they're saying is, "Pilate, we want you to remember that it is your duty as the Roman governor to respect our laws in matters such as this. And our laws, and according to them, this man must die because he claims to be the Son of God. And so they manipulate Pilate, and they continue to back him into a corner. And when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. This man who I have just flogged and beaten, you say is the Son of God? Pilate is Roman. Romans knew all about gods. They had lots of gods. And in their minds and in their tradition, gods came down and did things to people. Gods came down and interacted with people. And this man claims to be the Son of God? You didn't lead with that? And from a Roman perspective, his dilemma grows even bigger and bigger, and he sees the progression. It's early. What do you want? Why are you here? Come in. Oh, you can't come in. Right, okay, whatever. He seems to be innocent to me. He's actually not my problem. He's Galilean. Go see Herod. Oh, you're back, are you? I find nothing wrong with him. Flog him. Did I tell you I didn't find anything wrong with him? Behold, the man. Crucify? Why don't you do that? I have no reason to do that. You do. He's a god? So he went back inside the palace. Where do you come from? He asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. Do you refuse to speak to me? Pilate said. Do you know? Do you realize I have the power either to free you or to crucify you? And in his frustration, it's clouding his judgment. And he attempts to pull rank and remind Jesus who is in charge as he questions Jesus again. Question number one. Where do you come from? But Jesus gave him no answer. I honestly think that this is a bit of a rhetorical question in one sense, that it made no difference where he came from. He could have said, I was born in Bethlehem, lived in Nazareth, I've been all over Jerusalem, I've been all over Judea, I've been all over Samaria. He could have told him, hey, I'm from heaven. I don't think it would have mattered what his answer was. But then comes the second question. Do you refuse to speak to me? Jesus, do you know who you're talking to here? And Pilate pulls rank and he rests on this, on his dignity. I am the Roman governor. Don't you think that you should maybe say something? And that's followed up with this third punch. Don't you realize that I have the power either to free you or to crucify you? And this reveals the depths of his dilemma. Because on one hand, although he is trying hard, he cannot shift the responsibility of the decision. He does not want this to be his problem, but it is. And verse 11 says this, and Jesus answered, you would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin. Jesus is saying, earthly rulers may act only as God permits. You have no authority over me. Jesus has already said, no one takes my life from me. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to pick it up again. Predicting that he will die. I will lay it down, and I will pick it up again. But you are guilty of your decision. But the ones outside, they have more guilt than you. And from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jews kept shouting, if you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. They finally pull that ace out of their sleeve. If you let this man go, you are not a friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king is opposed to Caesar. What an absolute torturous situation to know the right thing to do and to be so fearful of what other people say and think that you cannot find it in you. You can't find it within yourself to do the right thing. Pilate was there in Jerusalem, looking over the Jews because, well, he was already in trouble with Rome. He had annoyed Rome. He was actually there being punished. If they got word of this, Pilate was in quite the dilemma. How this group irritated him. They claim that the Pilate was no friend of Caesar. How could you claim? I have given my life for Caesar. You guys are the ones who don't give a rip about Caesar. You just wanted this man dead. They claim he's some dangerous king. Fine. I'm going to throw that in their face. I'm going to surrender. And when Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the place known as the stone pavement, which is in Aramaic, Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. Here is your king, Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away, crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. We have no king but Caesar, the chief priest answered. And finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. Their fiendish chants reverberated their reaction. Take him away and crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. And here is quite a blasphemy from the good Jewish leaders. We have no king but Caesar. I'm sorry. Does not the law state God is your king? We have no king but Caesar. Who's truly blaspheming? The only king that they had as a possibility was standing right in front of them. But to reject Christ as king left them with only one other possibility in the political framework, and that was their submission to Caesar. And they refused to give honor to God. They refused to give honor to the Son of God. They refused to give honor to Jesus, the Messiah. They rejected the one who was born to be king. And Matthew's gospel tells us this: when Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but then instead of an uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." And all the people answered, "Let his blood be upon us and our children." Sorry. Ignoring his superstitions, ignoring his promptings, the ones that came from his wife have nothing to do with this man. Ignoring everything in the core of his being, he said, "You know, I should put all of you to death. I am the Roman governor. You cannot revolt against me. I have put thousands of you to death before, and I'll do it today." He could have said that, but he didn't. Instead, he ignored everything. He ignored all that was in it. He sat down on that judgment seat and said, "Crucify him." And John records that it took place at about the sixth hour. Because he says it's about the sixth hour, it means it's anywhere between the third hour and the sixth hour. So somewhere between 9 a.m. and noon, Pilate washes his hands and hands Jesus over to be crucified. You see, Pilate ran into a group of absolute radical fanatics that only wanted the death of Jesus. They would not be deterred in any other way. It had to be this one thing. And in his mind, the only way out was to wash his hands and surrender to their demands. Now, this morning, I hope that each and every one of us, each and every one of us has just a tiny bit of Pilate in us. Pilate surrendered. Will you surrender your will? Not to the crowds, but to the King of Kings who went to the cross for you. Will you surrender your will to Jesus?
Yes, ma'am.
Praise God. Surrender your will to Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Today we have a second brand new song. And I'm going to call them up in a minute. Just hang on a second, guys, before you come up. Some of us, this is a new song. I don't think we've ever sung it here at Maranatha before. But it's called Man of Sorrows. And as the team comes up, let me share with you a few of the lines for us to think about as we sing these words. Man of sorrow, Lamb of God, by his own betrayed. The sin of man and wrath of God has been on Jesus laid. Silent as he stood accused, beaten, mocked, and scorned. Bowing to the Father's will, he took a crown of thorns. Oh, that rugged cross, my salvation, where your love poured out over me. Now my soul cries out, hallelujah, praise and honor unto thee. Praise and honor unto thee. If you can declare these words this morning and are able to stand and sing along with us this morning.